Welcome back to Ed Show number 74. I'm Simon, joined again by David. Well, David, we're doing this news kind of regularly now.
We are.
Lots of new features getting ready for launch here.
Rick's out in Australia, New Zealand, so, you know, here we are.
Here we are, and our new guy coming soon. We're going to save a little surprise to see who our new guy's going to be
soon. That's right.
But it will get confusing, let me tell you. This person may have a similar name to someone else already on this team.
That's a hint.
Stay tuned there. Well, let's start by covering the news as well. First thing is talking about access to RTM bits. Now, we released RTM for Windows 8, for Windows Server 2012 and System Center 2012, really just to our manufacturing partners, so our big OEMs. And we got a lot of feedback from our customers saying, hey, you know what? I'm writing apps, I'm doing development. I need access to these bits early. So we listened to your feedback loud and clear, and as of this week, we have now published Windows 8.1 RTM bits. We have published Windows Server 2012 R2 RTM bits, and we have also released Visual Studio 2013 release candidate bits. So hearing that feedback loud and clear, you now have access to a lot of these bits. However, I did also want to make you aware of one other tool that's related to the Windows 8.1 deployment that was also released this week, and this is the Windows ADK, the Assessment and Development Kit. Now, essentially, what this is it's the collection of utilities designed for people that are actually going about and starting to plan their Windows 8.1 deployment. And it contains quite a lot of different technologies included in here. So it starts with the Application Compatibility Toolkit. So that's going to kind of tell you whether your apps are going to work when you move to 8.1. It includes several deployment tools, so helping you configure things such as DISM and with PowerShell. It has the user state migration tool that allows you to actually copy users' profile information, data, and settings between these versions. The volume activation management tool allowing you to quickly license whether you're using KMS, retail license keys, multiple activation keys, and then several other performance and testing toolkits as well. So kind of a lot of packages, a lot of information now available for you to get up and running.
Yeah, and there are a ton of new enhancements to Windows 8.1 for enterprises and deployments and customizing things, new group policy settings, a lot of stuff to help out with the IT folks, get those out there and make things easier for folks to use Windows 8 to more what they're used to.
Windows 8 for the enterprise,
really
big focus with this release, making it enterprise ready.
Yep.
And there's also a lot of Azure releases and announcements this week as well.
Of course, every month, new Azure updates. And this month, we have quite a few announcements, one being the release of a preview for the Windows Azure Cache Service. The Cache Service is for Windows Azure applications. It could be, you know, an application you might have on a Windows or a Linux VM, or even, you know, a platform as a service app. That enables your application to store information in that cache, which is like memory, right? So it's going to be highly performant to really improve the overall performance of your apps. We also have a capacity planning guide for the cache service. So if you're trying to figure out what you need to pay and have a rough idea of what that would cost you to use the cache, there's a download for that. One other thing I want to highlight as well is the autoscale service. The autoscale service is, you saw this in the last episode where we dove into a lot of the options there. Well, we now have autoscale for websites and virtual machines, whereas previously we had the autoscale, scheduled autoscale, I should say, for just cloud services. We've added that scheduled autoscale now for virtual machines, which for all of you IT pros, that's, you know, a great thing. You want to spin up new VMs at, 9 a.m. and spin them down on a weeknight. We have those weekday, weeknight options as well that we added in.
So remind me, what exactly is autoscale here? I may have missed last week's episode, even though I hosted it. What is autoscale?
Yeah, sure. Autoscale is great if you want to automatically, either via CPU or queue, increase or decrease your instances running inside of Windows Azure, right? Could be platform as a service instances, or it could be virtual machine instances. You want to automatically scale to more instances of a virtual machine, or when you're not using it, scale down. That, of course, naturally saves you a lot of money and helps your system be highly performant, right? Because, you know, if you get a sudden surge of that traffic from whatever, a marketing campaign or whatever, you want to be able to have it adjust dynamically to that load and be able to handle the requests, right?
Right.
So that's autoscale in a nutshell. So the other thing that I want to call out from that is a minor thing, but for those of you who are IT guys, you probably are familiar with IIS and HTTP logs. Well, we now have an easy way to make you store those logs into a Windows Azure storage account. So it makes it really easy, as you can see there on the screen. You know, just click that option for storage, save your logs there, and if you need to do any debugging or, you know, whatever you happen to do with your logs, you can dig into that. Okay, another post, not on the Scott Goo release. we have one for the Windows Azure Active Directory blog. You know, we get a lot of customers who are asking about Office 365 and or Windows Intune, and how does that relate to Windows Azure Active Directory? So this post gives a good summary of some of the different options that are there, because there's, you know, where does Windows Azure Active Directory fit? We've got the application portal, and then we also have this new application enhancements there. So if you look on the screen there, what you can see is the portal, the app portal that we're enabling, that's in preview right now, which enables a single sign-on experience for your users, right? If they log on using their Active Directory credentials. So you could enable, for instance, let's say a single sign-on to your Office 365 portal. So this article is really good just to give you an idea of the different components that we have and how those work together.
Great.
Speaking of Office 365, there's also another announcement this week we have, and it really relates for the nonprofits that are out there that want to use Office 365. We've now announced that you're able to accept donations for Office 365 accounts. That's a pretty big deal for folks. You know, box software has been a thing that we've been doing for quite a long time, that with donations. Cloud services is relatively new, and I know from my own experience, I mean, there's a lot of nonprofits out there that really could benefit from Office 365 or are looking into it. And it's good to know that now you can accept donations or have the possibility of getting donations for the Office 365 cloud service.
Great, and we'll include the link to how to sign up, get engaged in that program right at the bottom of this page as well.
Yep.
Well, thanks, David. That was quite a lot from you. I just got one final thing before we move over to our interview, and that is we're happy to announce that Hyper-V will now be coming in Windows Server 2012 R2 Essentials Edition. And so once again, a lot of feedback from our customers saying, hey, we have Essentials, we can still get Hyper-V Server for free. Why are you not letting me ship Hyper-V in the box? So heard that feedback loud and clear, and now Hyper-V will be included in Windows Server Essentials. Now, if you actually go to the blog itself, it will include detail on some of the licensing considerations for the actual host, for the guest VMs, being able to set up multiple essential servers, things like that. So check out this blog post for kind of all the details of how you can get that up and running.
Yeah, and I mean, if you were a previous home server person, I mean, Server Essentials is something you definitely want to check out. You've got all those capabilities of the backup and restore of your data. You can have a media streaming service inside of your network. So, you know, I use it at home. I think it's a really great product. But Hyper-V, man, I hear there's some good interview here on Hyper-V, right?
Well, that's right. You are getting us prepped for our interview topic of the day very shortly. I'm going to be joined by Matt McSpirit, and we're going to be discussing how we can optimize Microsoft workloads as they run on Hyper-V. So taking a look at things like SQL, SharePoint, Exchange, and Link, and how they can get that best in class while running on Hyper-V and the Microsoft virtualization stack. Well, with that, let's head over to our interview. Welcome back. I'm joined by Matt McSpirit, and as part of this interview segment, we're going to be looking at how we've optimized the Microsoft workloads, specifically in a virtualized environment, running on Hyper-V and Windows Server 2012. But first of all, I'm going to let Matt reintroduce himself. He is a regular guest, so I'm sure you've seen him by now, but
I think it's the first time I've been on the Edge show, though.
Is it?
Yes,
really?
Yes.
Okay.
So lots
not
of jump
that
starts,
regular.
But no, there you go. Lots of jump starts, though. But yeah, my name is Matt McSpirit. I'm a technical product manager in the Windows Server and System Center division.
Great. So Hyper-V, this has been obviously one of our big investment areas we make with each of our Windows Server releases.
Uh-huh.
Virtualization, big thing. What were the big goals, big investments with Windows Server 2012 R2?
So with 2012 R2, there was a phenomenal amount of stuff that was in the box specifically for Hyper-V across both scalability and performance, building on what we had in 2012, integrating better with hardware, but also around storage and networking. Mm-hmm. So if you are familiar with 2012, we introduced our storage spaces technology, which effectively allowed you to aggregate physical disks in a Hyper-V host or in a general host, and then pull them and then slice them into spaces. And now we've introduced tiering, which is effectively a combination of SSD and regular spinning disk, moving hot blocks around depending on what they're doing to better utilize and gain better performance. So that was storage. Networking and better integration with hardware, offloading, improvements in network virtualization. And if we think about the pure Hyper-V side of things, so moving virtual machines around, for instance, we had live migration in 2012. We had live migration moving the storage, so storage live migration and shared nothing, so moving the state and the storage simultaneously between hosts that had nothing but an Ethernet cable connecting them. But in R2, we've actually introduced improvements to live migration. You know, you think, well, it's still just moving VMs around. How does it get any better? Well, live migration with compression.
Makes it faster.
Yep. Even better. Compression effectively utilizes spare CPU cycles within the Hyper-V host to compress memory as it's being moved from host to host. So instead of sending loads of memory, we're compressing it and then sending it, which happens faster. And the alternative to compression, if you've got a lot of fast links, you can use live migration over SMB. So effectively combining multiple SMB NICs, so utilizing multi-channel capabilities of SMB, and effectively transporting live migration traffic at a phenomenal speed. Think about using InfiniBand or RDMA type network adapters, mm-hmm. and we can accelerate live migration to just rocket speed. It's phenomenal. And they're just some of the investments we made. And all of this benefits our key workloads that we want to run on our platform to prove out that Hyper-V really is the best platform for those workloads.
Well, I think you want to kind of, you're leading into our next question, right? We talked about how we've improved the host, the physical infrastructure, but we also wanted to make sure our applications work just best on Hyper-V. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what are the kind of the key critical apps that we've been focusing on with our engineering teams? And what are kind of the workload management investments we've made?
As a company, we've started to make an incredible investment in working together on these applications and workloads. So if you think about Windows Server's traditional release cycle, it's a major release every couple of years, which gave our workload respective teams, the SharePoints, the SQLs, the Exchanges of the world, a lot of time to start to phase that in with their test processes and work together to build out a better platform for customers. But now with Windows Server 2012 and now R2, we're accelerating our cadence of delivery and we're working more closely together because we have to with those respective workload teams to ensure that as quickly as possible, the workload A runs best and is supported on the OS, and B runs great in a virtualized environment on the OS. So there's a lot of work that is done from a joint engineering perspective to align those test passes, the test scenarios, the procedures that we should be providing to those workload owners to enhance their workload on the platform. And that's something that we've worked closely with engineering, and that's something I guess you'll have from your past a lot of experience with.
Yeah. I can talk a little bit about what we used to do back on engineering on the cluster team. So what are the requirements anytime we shipped a product? So any version of Windows, any service pack, you know, any of these major mm-hmm. updates. We had to go through this crazy checklist called the Common Engineering Criteria,
yep.
CEC. And if you were a release manager, like I spent for a little bit, it's your worst nightmare. It's 150 pages, dense lines with checkboxes, and everything has to pass to be yep. able to ship as an enterprise product. So, okay, how's that relevant? Well, a lot of that, a huge section, is how we run it in a virtualized environment. So ensuring that there's no performance degradation, virtualized networks work, it can work during the live migration. Really just trying to think about what are the key requirements for Hyper-V? And if we virtualize that workload or that application, how are we going to ensure that it still works and still kind of meets the same expectations that we've had with our traditional shipping products?
Exactly.
So kind of the cool thing about this is every app that Microsoft builds, whether it's a product within Windows Server, a component within Server, or just a separate product, has to pass these guidelines. So that can give you quite a lot of confidence that Microsoft really is testing throughout our integrated stack as well.
Yeah.
Microsoft on top of Hyper-V with no performance degradation as well.
Exactly.
So it's been really interesting to kind of see both sides, you know, both from the actual building, the design,
yeah.
now kind of seeing how these workloads are really being used and taking advantage in the real world.
Exactly, yeah. It's we're really pushing forward together as a single company just to help make things better for customers universally as they've virtualized these perhaps less lower hanging fruit, you know, the file servers, the print servers, they've all been done. Now it's the more mission critical workloads, of which Exchange, SQL, SharePoint, you know, they form a key part of those kind of workloads. So
I mean, you know, it's okay to hear, you know, our opinion and saying everything works, but I mean, how do we really, you know, get this testing? Like, what do we work with our third parties? Like, where could people go to really get some kind of third party evidence about how Hyper-V or how these workloads perform on Hyper-V?
Yeah, good question. So aside from the testing that we do internally on your behalf and on customers' behalf to save you the job, we've worked with a number of partners and an analyst in particular called ESG Enterprise Strategy Group to help test and then publish reports on the performance of workload X on Hyper-V in Windows Server 2012. So we're currently going through the testing process for R2, but as it stands published now in the public domain, we've got workload performance tests for SQL Server, SharePoint, and Exchange, all the current shipping versions of those workloads on the 2012 version of Hyper-V, which is unlike our competitors who have a variation of N-1 hypervisor or N-1 or N-2 version of the application or workload. So we're really confident that we want to give customers the confidence in our platform for combining those workloads and applications.
Great, and we'll definitely include the links to all of these references we're talking at the bottom of this page, so you can actually check that out yourselves. You know, don't trust us. Let's be honest, we're shareholders. We might have some bias here, but we'll make sure that we get you the right reports.
Absolutely.
But now, we talked about the Microsoft apps and how we can do our internal testing. What about third-party applications? Things like, I don't know, Oracle, SAP, some of these other enterprise apps.
Yeah, so it's interesting you mention Oracle, because a couple of months back in June, we actually moved into a strategic partnership with Oracle around their Oracle workloads running in a virtualized environment on Hyper-V and also on Azure, so not just the on-premise scenarios. And that was really around clarifying for joint customers, A, supportability, because it was always a bit of a gray area of virtualizing Oracle. Do I have to use Oracle's virtualization technology? Is VMware supported? Is Microsoft? There was lots of questions, and this announcement and this strategic partnership we entered into really helps to clarify that. So all of the supported guidance is now being made available. It's for Oracle running on Windows Server in a virtualized environment, and we're also doing a lot of work to support Oracle Linux on Hyper-V and Azure as well. So there's lots of stuff in the works there. We've not really done any performance testing at this stage in terms of public reports, aside from ensuring it works really well and is supported. But from an SAP perspective, there was work done around the TechEd timeframe this year that actually showcased a world record for a fully virtualized SAP infrastructure running on Hyper-V on two processor servers. So it's a selection of Hyper-V hosts running the virtualized SAP infrastructure, all on Windows Server 2012, virtualized on Hyper-V, and using SQL Server as the back end. And that was a world record. And that was a phenomenal announcement for us in that close collaboration between Microsoft, SAP, and HP, the hardware vendor in that case.
No, that was a world record in performance, was it?
Yeah, in the SAP benchmark terms, which we'll publish links for the actual SAP benchmark site that you can find more information on that as well. It's a standardized benchmark, so yeah.
Very cool, very cool. So, I mean, with, you know, whether you're running a Microsoft app, a third-party app, what type of best practices are we encouraging people to look at as they're, you know, running in this virtualized environment?
It's interesting because there's always going to be best practices that are very specific to the workload in question. So for instance, Exchange, as a good example, is a workload, once it's in a virtual machine, doesn't support dynamic memory. You can turn it on, but the Exchange team, the product support, don't support that at this stage, whereas SQL Server would. So the subtleties around some of that, but the actual fabric configuration, the host, the servers, the storage, best practices are pretty common across all of those. Yes, you would tune the storage connectivity, for instance, if you've got a very high IOPS database or an Exchange server that's very busy, for instance. Or you may choose to use SRIOV network adapters if you've got a web front end for SharePoint that's really, really busy and the traffic is very high and that's causing a lot of CPU utilization. But thankfully, to save you all of this guesswork and for hunting around different places on the web and different blogs, we've created three, as it stands today, guides, best practice guides, really detailed. I mean, these are 90, 95 page guides on our best practices for virtualizing and also managing, which we'll touch on a bit later on, those key workloads. So when we think about the fabric configuration, what should you be thinking about? What should you be avoiding? Should I be using SLAT hardware? Should I be using certain types of NICs? When we think about making the fabric resilient, clustering, which is something close to your heart, getting the storage all configured, the networking, and then also around the actual virtual machine configuration itself. So little things like the dynamic memory example is a good one, and anti-affinity rules and so on. There's loads of valuable information in one place.
Right.
And you can download it and read it at bedtime or whenever it's suitable.
Very nice. Well, so far we kind of talked about these best practices around performance, but mm-hmm. what about kind of taking it to the next step, managing, using System Center, how we can really optimize and manage these apps at scale?
Yeah. So the guidance that's in that we just referred to, the three guides, do cover some of this management as well in quite a bit of detail. But as we go forward, we want to help customers understand just how to extract even more value from the workload using System Center. So if you think about VMM, Virtual Machine Manager, within System Center, people just think it's about deploying VMs, but it does a lot more than that. It's about deploying services as well. So services like SQL, services like SharePoint, and we'll touch on and showcase how it does that a bit later on in a demonstration. So VMM is really becoming a central tool to get the fabric in order and then start to deploy applications and workloads in a seamless way on top in a repeatable manner. But once it's deployed, we want to be able to monitor it from a health and an alerting perspective, and that's where Ops Manager, Operations Manager comes in to really help us identify any problems, any configuration issues that may be causing a performance problem. When we think about protecting the workload, Data Protection Manager, great solution to provide granular backup for those key applications and workloads. So SQL, SharePoint, Exchange, Hyper-V VMs, protecting those key workloads inside VMs, even if they're third-party workloads running inside the VM. The VM-level backup that DPM can provide is pretty useful for that type of environment. And then you've got some of the other System Center components like Orchestrator. Start automating tasks associated with the workload. You know, if you're forever creating new users in Exchange, you know, maybe incorporating some of the System Center Orchestrator and the Exchange integration pack within the System Center family, you can start to automate some of those common tasks that can save you a lot of time. And it's standardized and it's repeatable. So that's just a handful of some of the System Center tools that can provide value to our workloads. And they're all starting to come together from a workload perspective and really provide a lot of value in your workload management going forward.
Very nice. Well, I know we have the demo system set up, and my understanding is you're going to show us Virtual Machine Manager and really take a look at some of the templates and show us, you know, not just how we can do VMs using Virtual Machine Manager, but how we can really open up that VM and really add kind of application level information in that.
Yep.
So can you dive in here?
Absolutely. Let's take a look. So what we've got on the screen now is Virtual Machine Manager 2012 SP1, so the current shipping version. We're in the VMs and services workspace at the moment, but we want to go into the library because, as Simon said, that's where our templates reside. And in the templates section, we've got a couple of different choices: service deployment, service templates, and VM templates. And we're going to come to some of those a bit later on. But first, we'll focus on VM templates, which many of you may know as good old school ways of accelerating VM deployment. But that's just it. They're old school VM templates, or at least with our competitors, they are. When we start to look at what VMM can do for regular templates, when we open one up here, and this is a web template. So this template has got a specific function to provide for our business. When we look at the hardware config, we set all of the configuration items for the template. But this virtual disk that I'm indicating here is a sysprepped virtual disk. So it's been a gold image. We've updated it. We've done the necessary work. And then we've sysprepped it, or VMM has done that for us, actually, and then stored it in the library, which means when we deploy this particular template, it's already ready to go with all the OS has expanded. It's all good to go. We don't need to configure all the roles and features straight away. If I come out and I look at the application configuration, this is where we can apply specific app level, so inside the guest OS level, configuration items. In this case, this is going to transform the standardized Windows server into a web server.
Now, when you say an app, what exactly do you mean by an app? Can you help me define that or scope that?
So an app in this sense is let's call it a workload that's running inside the virtual machine. So a website running on a web server is an application in a sense. It's not a traditional app like you would get on your Windows phone, for instance, but it's an application or a service that's running inside the VM that's providing users with some kind of benefit. In this case, a user would log on to the Pet Shop website, and that's what we've packaged up in here. This zip file here is a whole website. But if we need to scale this out to multiple web servers, we just deploy the package and the relevant configuration items. So we can standardize and accelerate. But if we look at the other one, the SQL, which is one of our core workloads, this Pet SQL has the same OS configuration. And we look at the hardware, and we've got that sysprep disk. But there's a difference with this disk here. This is a disk that's been sysprepped with SQL Server already inside it, which means when we come to the SQL configuration, we've actually got specific information about SQL Server. So the instance name, the instance ID, configuration, the SQL files that reside inside that VM, administrators that are going to be applied, what kind of authentication mode, and any service accounts that we're going to run. So this is effectively bolting on a configuration item on top of the core of SQL that's been generalized inside that virtual disk. So to get to that, we created a VM, updated it, we installed SQL in advanced mode, which gives you a sysprep capability, and then we sysprep the whole OS, and then we added it to this template. And from this point forward, we apply the config and any DAC packages, which are like SQL-specific configurations that go over the top of the SQL install. And what we end up with once we've deployed this VM is a fully ready SQL configuration with all the databases and tables ready to go, ready to integrate with our web front end.
So are you saying, what would my experience be if I just, you deploy this VM, I log into it, I now have access to SQL, my accounts are configured. Like, what level of information does this actually give me and get me up and running?
Exactly, just what you've described. That's the kind of thing. So for instance, if you wanted to deliver infrastructure as a service in your environment and you had DBAs, database admins, frequently asking for new VMs running SQL Server, you can abstract all of that information behind a template, the product key, all of that kind of stuff. And every time they request one, you can just deploy out from this template in a standardized way. The naming conventions, all of the configuration, the networking, it's all handled within that template. And if you want to put something like App Controller, another system center component, in front of VMM, that can be the interface for the DBAs to access their SQL servers. You know, it's pretty rich. But they were just regular templates. We want to really amp this up a little bit and look at service templates.
Oh, what is a service template? How does that differ?
So a VM template is a building block of a service template. So think about SharePoint is a good example. SharePoint as an application is not typically deployed on a single VM. It's got a database backend. It's got an application tier. It's got multiple web front ends. It's a tiered application. Mm-hmm. And it's a service that you're providing to the business. And that's what service templates allow us to model in VMM. So for instance, here we've got a pet shop service that I'm creating. It's going to be two tiers, of which there can be three, but we can add even more. I'm just going to go with two tiers. And what we find is it will use our, and I'll drag these on from the left, it will use our regular templates that we created earlier, or at least looked at earlier. It will use those as the building blocks. So now I've dragged those on. Let's save and validate to get rid of some of these alert messages, the little red icons here, and they should disappear, and they have. And what we see here is because these are a service, they have a relationship from this point forward. They're deployed together. They can be scaled out. So if we see the instance here, Pet Shop Web, you'll see at the bottom here, I've got prevent this virtual machine from being migrated. No, that's fine. This VM can be live migrated around. But I can say, what order do I want this VM or this particular tier to be deployed in? So for instance, if I want SQL to be deployed first and then the web front end, I'll set this as two. Can this tier be scaled out with more web servers? So remember, you can have multiple VMs per tier, and I'll leave it at default one, but maximum of five. And then from a SQL perspective, I don't want to change that. I want to keep the deployment order. First up is SQL. This tier can't be scaled out, and we're pretty much good to go. So I'll save that. I mean, this is just a very simple example. You can build very complex service templates that model your applications or your line of business apps within your environment. And we're actually working with engineering to actually build out and release more service templates that reflect our other applications like SharePoint, which is actually already available on the TechNet galleries, but we're working on others as well to help customers standardize and deploy these kind of workloads more quickly.
Very nice.
So I'm going to configure a deployment. It's going to pop up the configure deployment wizard, and you'll see it's got lots of information on the screen here. Let's just refresh this to check that I can actually deploy this into my environment. And it's saying, yep, we're going to place this SQL 01 on host 02. We're going to put web 01 on host 01. They're all going to be connected to the same network, and we're pretty much good to go. So I'll go deploy. Are you sure? Are we sure?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Off we go. Deploy.
So deploy.
And that's it. Within a couple of clicks, we've actually started to deploy a new service to the business that's got a relationship between the individual VMs and tiers. And if we need to scale out that web front end to handle more traffic, we can scale that out flexibly and manage that going forward. And we monitor it as a service, maintain it as a service.
That's excellent. I mean, I think that's a great example of how we're really trying to just, you know, peek inside that VM, not just look at the external boundaries of the virtual hardware, guest OS, but really try to get that application insight and visibility.
Exactly.
And I think that's only something, you know, that we can deliver with these integrated teams working on the same project together.
Yep.
So I think this is a great example of, you know, how we're getting this better together story throughout the Microsoft stack.
Exactly.
Now, where can people go to learn more?
Where can people go? That place called the internet. There's a whole host of it'll catch on eventually. There's a whole host of stuff on the Microsoft.com server and cloud page where we've got a virtualized enterprise apps or applications section, and there you'll find our ESG performance test reports that we talked about briefly earlier on. You'll find those incredibly important best practice guides for Exchange, SQL, and SharePoint. You'll find links off to lots of TechNet information about how it relates to System Center, so VMM, Orchestrator, and so on, some of the service template stuff we talked about before as well. So it's a real central hub on Microsoft.com in the server and cloud section under virtualized enterprise applications. You'll find all of this stuff.
Great, thanks, Matt. We'll include links to all of that in this post as well. And don't forget the Microsoft Virtual Academy as well. Lots of additional training there on building and designing services with VMM. Got to plug the MVA.
Yep.
All right, well, with that, thanks again for joining us, Matt.
My pleasure.
Really appreciate having you, and we'll see you again shortly. Welcome back. Well, I hope you found that informative, and hopefully we did a little bit to convince you to make sure that you're running your enterprise apps on Hyper-V, because things are getting even better with our upcoming 2012 release. Well, that about wraps it up for the show, but we do want to stay engaged with you, so if you have any questions, comments, feedback, definitely reach out to us. What are the different channels they can do that through?
We got a lot of options for you. Of course, if you have something related to this specific episode, comment on this post. But if you have any general feedback for us at the Edge team, you can send us something on our Facebook page. You could send us a tweet for our Twitter account, @TNEdge. Or you could send us an email, edge@microsoft.com, and we will communicate with you that way.
Sounds great. Thanks for joining me, David, and we will see you back next week.